Hello and welcome to another edition of Catholic Answers Live, the show where you can get almost any question imaginable answered by our team of wonderful apologists and experts. Hey, welcome. My name is Don Johnson, sitting in for Cy Kellett today. Great to have you along. The number, as always, is 888-318-7884. We have a fantastic lineup. In hour two today, we're going to be talking to Roy Shoman about the Jewish roots of Catholicism. This is a wonderful topic, one that's close to my heart. It's actually one that brought me into the Catholic Church a few years ago, at least predominantly. One of the major issues I had was how the Catholic Church fulfilled the Old Testament. And so that should be a wonderful conversation. Get your questions ready for Roy. But in this first hour, we have one of everyone's favorite experts here at Catholic Answers. Trent Horn is, of course, a staff apologist here. He's a speaker, part-time professor, and a prolific writer. His latest books include Why We're Catholic, What the Saints Never Said, and Made This Way, a book he co-authored with Layla Miller, which is tearing up the book charts as we speak. Today, we're going to be talking about tips for defending the faith. Trent Horn, welcome to the big show.
Thank you for being here, Don, and filling in for Mr. Cy Kellett.
You know, we will do our best. It's always a challenge to fill in for the man himself, but we're going to do our best. hope everyone is surviving wintertime. I know in San Diego, which I would love to be, Trent. I'd love to be in San Diego today, but no, I'm bearing the winter up here in the Pacific Northwest. The number again is 888-318-7884, and the topic is tips for defending the faith. Let's start with a general one. Trent, just a general principle. You've got somebody out there who's, having a tough coworker at work or some family members, and they're just not sure how to defend the faith well. Are there some general principles we can start with for being a better apologist?
Sure, and they're counterintuitive. A lot of people think that to be a good apologist, a good defender of the Catholic faith, you have to be the kind of Catholic answer man or woman. You have to be able to answer every argument and just have that perfect reply that will make people change their minds. But really, my number one tip for people is to stop and ask questions and listen more than trying to give the right answer. So if you're having trouble breaking through to someone, it may not be that they need you to just spoon-feed them the right answer. They might need you to ask them questions about what do they think about Catholicism? Why do they think that? How did they come to arrive at that conclusion? What made them change their mind before, or what could maybe get them to change their mind or their behavior in the future? And to let them unspool a little bit in that regard, to ask questions and spend time listening and finding common ground doing so. That was very helpful in my own earlier pro-life work with the organization Justice for All. And I found it helpful just on a wide variety of topics that we need to engage in directed dialogue, not dialogue for dialogue's sake, not just sitting around holding hands singing Kumbaya. But we're also not in a debate sharpshooter mentality here. I mean, I do debates. Debates are great to get people to talk about the faith. But in our regular conversations, I think dialogue, listening, and finding common ground is probably the most effective thing we can do.
Yeah, you know, I found this myself, Trent, and something I learned the hard way, as maybe you did early on, you know, doing a lot of radio work and you're just on fire. Hey, you know, you really need to know this, people. And I found that I was constantly speaking to an issue that they didn't actually either care about or believe in, right? Like you're shooting down some sort of objection that they actually don't have, and you wonder why your conversation never goes anywhere, huh?
Right, yeah. Another thing is sometimes when we hear other people's arguments or responses and we give a reply, we're not replying to their original argument. We take a weakened version or a misunderstood version of it and we make our reply. A lot of times that results from failing to listen and engage the person, but other times it can be reminiscent of a logical fallacy called the straw man. A straw man occurs, you know, imagine a scarecrow in a field. It's a lot easier to beat up a scarecrow in a fight than a real flesh and blood human being. So straw man is you take the other guy's position, his argument, you make it weaker, either intentionally or unintentionally most of the time, and refute that. But the other person will say, but that's not really what I believe. That's not what I'm saying. And it becomes frustrating there. The antidote to straw manning is what has been called in recent years steel manning. That's where you take a person's position or argument, you actually strengthen it, you make it stronger, but then show where it still has problems. And that can engender a lot of respect and time for reflection from the other person.
Well, and Trent, you know, not to toot your own horn, but you're actually one of the best on this. If you look at the reviews of Trent Horn's debates and his work, you're known for actually presenting the other person's argument a lot of times better than they do. it's like you'll almost correct them or help them along a little bit. And like, no, don't you actually mean this? So
yeah, I'm sure you mean this instead. But here's right. the problem that yeah, because my goal is not to win a debate. My goal is not to be flash in a pan or razzle and dazzle people. My goal is to get at the truth and to present it to people, even if they're uncomfortable at that truth. In some cases, that might be non-Catholics who are uncomfortable with the truth of divine revelation. It could also come from Catholics who are uncomfortable hearing a truth that takes away maybe an urban legend they used to rely on in their own apologetics. I'll give you an example. A lot of Catholics are fond of quoting the World Catholic Encyclopedia as saying that there are 33,000, what they'll say, Protestant denominations. And, you know, look at Sola Scriptura, the blueprint for anarchy. You know, there's 33,000 Protestant denominations. We got the one Catholic Church. Shouldn't it be obvious, you know, we should be Catholic and see what Sola Scriptura has done? But that is not a good argument because the World Christian Encyclopedia, that reference work, one, it counts those as all Christian denominations. It says there's 9,000 Protestants, independents. It says there are 243 Catholic denominations. Now, it inflates the number grossly for two reasons. One, it counts churches in different countries as being different denominations, even if their only difference is geographical, which is not a viable difference. That's not a difference, really. It's just a difference in place rather than doctrine. And second, with the Catholic Church, it says that different rites, like the Byzantine Rite, the Maronite Rite, the Syro-Malabar Rite, Antiochene, that those are different denominations. They're not denominations. They're fully in union with the Pope. They believe Catholic doctrine. They've just retained different ancestral traditions, but they're still a part of the one Catholic Church. So that's why I don't quote that. I say there's lots of Protestant denominations, even if there were only dozens. That's still way more than the one the one church, the single unity Jesus prayed for in John 17. So it's just things like that to always be aware. It's kind of why, Don, my worst performing book, the book that is the absolute stinker of all of them, is What the Saints Never Said. I wrote that book, you know, showing that some of those very famous saint quotations are apocryphal, and some of them have heresies subtly built into them. And it is now ranked, I think, like number 1 million on Amazon. Nobody, no Catholic wants to read it and have their bubble burst. But hey, you know, we should care about truth. So if you want to boost its ranking to get up at least in the 500,000s, consider checking out What the Saints Never Said.
Go to Amazon right now. Pick up that book. Let's get it out of the mail. No, I hear you, Trent. It's very hard for bubbles to be burst. And before we go to the phones, and here's the number, in case you're just joining us, 888-318-7884. That's 888-31-TRUTH. We're talking with Trent Horn about tips to be a better apologist, tips for defending the faith. I do want to point out there's a psychological relational issue that goes on, too, that I've noticed. When you focus on asking questions and really listening, I don't know who wrote it. I mean, it's a common sense principle, but it struck me one time that most people in their entire lives, like say you look at the last 4 weeks of your life or whatever, hardly anyone has actually asked you a question and really listened. Like people don't actually listen to other people in day-to-day life. And when you find someone who does, it's like a huge relational boost. And so, you know, even if they're coming into a debate format, to meet someone like you, Trent, who says, well, no, you tell me. I mean, I want to clarify. You tell me what you think and let mm-hmm. me be clear about it. It really builds a lot of bridges, don't you think?
I'm sorry. What were you saying? People, they're not listening. They don't listen, right? Yeah, that's... I firmly agree with that, and people appreciate that to build out that goodwill and keep the conversation going, but yes.
Let us, I think we got time to do one phone call before we take a break, shall we? Let's go to George, who has called in, listening on Sirius XM from beautiful Birmingham, Alabama. George, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hi there. Big fan of yours, Trent, you know,
thanks.
Like to watch all your debates, but so my question is, and just a small backstory. I'm 18, and I went to Catholic school my life. Mm-hmm. I go to a university here that's not Catholic. It's Southern Baptist in Birmingham. But anyways,
mm-hmm. Sure.
I'm Catholic, obviously. But the rest of my family is, with the exception of very few,
sure,
all lapsed Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mom is She left the Catholic Church just a few years after I was born, but she didn't meet a Catholic school, but I've received all the sacraments that a kid. And I've always identified that way. And now that I'm becoming more serious about it, we argue about it a lot. So sometimes we like to, push it away and not talk about it. But my uncles, most of my family's life is Catholic. And sometimes it's even to where they'll make fun of me a little or tease.
How to reach out to them? Is that what you're concerned with?
I mean, especially when they say they've done that, they've been there, done that. I couldn't fall for that again. Is basically what they say.
That's interesting. I guess you could say, well, okay, you say you've been there, done that, but you could say I know lots of other people who are been there, still there. So what are they not seeing? Or you could ask them honestly, what am I falling for? Because I want to really know the truth. We'll have to go to our first break here in a second, so I can only touch on this ever so briefly. But George, I'd like you to give your email to our call screener, because I would like to send you an episode from my podcast, The Council of Trent. I did an episode recently called 9 Tips for Evangelizing Friends and Family. I don't know have you heard that or familiar with my podcast at all?
I listen to your podcast sometimes, but never have I... I haven't heard that one. No.
Okay, so here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to send you, our call screener will get your email. I would like to send you a copy of that episode, 9 Tips to Evangelize Friends and Family, because just very quickly, Jesus had problems evangelizing his friends and family. A prophet is not accepted in his own homeland. It's a very difficult group to reach. So what we have to do is understand sometimes we have to be John the Baptist more than Jesus. We prepare the way by having dialogue, keeping the channels of communication open, asking questions, and as my friend Steve Ray says, loving them more than we ever have in the past and putting kind of the long game in. St. Monica, when she prayed for her son, St. Augustine, said, she went to Ambrose, who later baptized him, and said, what do I do, Augustine? He won't listen to me when I talk about Catholicism. And Ambrose said, maybe you should... instead of talking to Augustine about God so much, maybe you should talk to God about Augustine. So praying for our friends and family for their conversion. So a lot more involved in that. But I think, we have to have dialogue, keep the channel communication open, love them more than we've ever loved them before, and ask those good questions like, what am I missing? Or what would it take? What would have to change within the church for you to come back? And that could show whether they're disagreeing over things that are not trivial, but they're not doctrine. It's just attitudes or things that you could agree. Yeah, these are bad attitudes, but we don't need people jumping ship over it, or doctrines that maybe they misunderstand. So stay on the line. I will send you that podcast episode. And our listeners, if you'd like to hear that and other great episodes, I would recommend you check out my podcast, The Council of Trent, C-O-U-N-S-E-L, Council of Trent at TrentHornPodcast.com.
All right, we appreciate the call. TrentHornPodcast.com is the place to go. And before we take your break, let me tell you somewhere else to go. Go to shop.catholic.com or the Catholic Answers Facebook page, because it is, in fact, 20 Answers Challenge Time. This happens, I don't know if every year. I know we did it last year, and Lent is coming up. In fact, 3 weeks from today, I believe, Lent, if I've got my calendar correct. Lent starts 3 weeks from today, March 6th, and we have a great offer for you. When you purchase a sampler of all 32 books in the 20 Answers series, and if you haven't seen this 20 Answers series, you got to check it out. Trent, I know, has a couple of books in there. It's wonderful, little short, readable, but yet comprehensive answers to some of your biggest questions, and you can have one of each of all 32 at 60% off. That's 60% off the normal price, and we challenge you to finish them all this Lent and Easter season. It's totally doable. If you get 32, I mean, you can read one a day easily, and hey, there's 40 days in Lent. So here's what you do. You get 60% off, and we'll give you free shipping. Just go to shop.catholic.com or the Catholic Answers Facebook page. 888-318-7884 is the number. We will be right back with Trent Horn on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at catholic.com. For a complete list of the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network AM and FM stations across America, go to EWTN.com. Look for the radio pull-down menu and select AM/FM stations. The list is updated regularly, so visit often. Again, go to EWTN.com. Look for the radio pull-down menu and select AM/FM stations. Also at EWTN.com, you'll find out how to listen to us on the web, on shortwave, and in some countries on satellite. You'll find it all on EWTN.com.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
That music means that you have arrived back at Catholic Answers Live. My name is Don Johnson, sitting in for Cy Kellett today. Fantastic show already happening, but we got lots more in store for you. Roy Shoman will be here in hour number two, talking about the Jewish roots of Catholicism. Right now, we have Trent Horn talking about tips for defending the faith, and you can get on board that discussion at 888-318-7884. Let's go right back to the phones, though. James has called in from Richmond, Virginia, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app, a very handy tool, I might add. James, you're on with Trent Horn, welcome.
Hey, thanks a lot. Sorry, some kids screaming in the background, so I'm just going to move to another room here. My question is, I listen to Trent a lot of the different debates, a lot of the videos on YouTube, and one thing I haven't heard much of is using miracles to defend the faith, and I think he hinted at it in one debate, and so I'm curious, you know, things like the Shroud of Turin, how it relates to the Sudarium of Oviedo, apparitions like Our Lady of Zaitun, the Tilma, things like that. And I'm just wondering, is that bad to use? And another thing, I listen to Father Spitzer occasionally, mm-hmm. and he's real big on near-death experiences and the studies that have, you know, come out of that where, you know, people leave their body and, you know, remember all these amazing things. So anyway, I'm just curious, are those bad things to use when trying to defend the faith?
James, thank you for the question. There's, I guess, two elements here. One, whether one should appeal to things like near-death experiences or reports of various miracles, either within the Catholic faith or other Christian faiths, there are Protestants who report miraculous experiences as well. Is that a viable, is it bad? One, is it something we should not do? And two, are there good things behind it? So that's one thing, those kinds of evidences themselves. And the second would be why I generally don't appeal to them. I'll answer the latter question first. I generally don't use near-death experiences or particular miracles like the Shroud of Turin and other things like that in my apologetics, simply because I don't feel that I have mastered those subjects from both sides to be able to present them in a formal argument. So I'm familiar with them, but if I were to use them in debates or other things like that, I would have to be well-versed on both sides. Like when I use an argument, I try to know almost all of the objections my opponent will offer at me and be able to make a reply to that. So there's just a, you know, I only have a finite amount of energy and my different passions. I've explored many different areas in our faith, including areas I think other Catholic writers haven't really touched on in a while, such as comprehensively addressing Bible difficulties. Before my book on that, Hard Sayings, there really wasn't anything. So I'm interested in those things. I'm familiar with them. I think they are viable signposts to evidence for the divine, evidence for the Christian faith. But if I was to present them, I'm also familiar with objections to both specific miracles like the Shroud of Turin, Miracle of Fatima, Marian apparitions, as well as objections to near-death experiences. Now, I have heard of the thing with near-death experiences, there are near-death experiences that may be able to be explained by just the brain emitting hallucinatory phenomena at death. But there are reports of near-death experiences that appear that a person was able to have sensory awareness and read labels on light posts or objects on top of buildings when they were dead, which they normally should not have been able to see. If those stories are true, I think they are very, at least very difficult for the atheistic materialistic worldview. However, I'm familiar with other skeptics who've done a lot of work on that, and they poke holes in that. What's hard is with some of these miracle and near-death accounts, they rely on historical anecdotal evidence that isn't entirely there. Or at least it's not manifest. Like, I've heard people say for some Eucharistic miracles, oh, there's this scientific report on this. And then atheists say that report doesn't exist. But I was just having a conversation with a Catholic apologist friend of mine who says, I did find that report. It was in an obscure Italian journal. I have the PDF. I'll send it to you. So for me, I want to have all my ducks in a row before I use these kinds of arguments. I'm interested. I think we should explore them. And I think they can certainly point towards the divine foundations of our faith and its veracity. But I would personally want to do more work in them. And I commend Catholic apologists who do work in that and can put forward their research for other people like me to critically examine. So I guess that's the long and the short of it. What do you think of that response?
No, I appreciate it. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. just with regards to the near-death experiences, I think there have been some pretty significant medical studies done, you know, where someone, again, I'm kind of, you know, just remembering after reading some of Father Spitzer's stuff, but, you know, people will leave their bodies, go through walls, see a shoe outside this building, you know, that no one even knew was there. And then someone would go out and like, hey, it's right there. And it's all been, you know, confirmed and all that.
Right. And so for me, I'd have to have all my ducks in a row to say, here is the primary report. Here's this account from this hospital record. Because the problem is sometimes testimony can be conflated or embellished later on. And so it's kind of like, I mean, there's just other paranormal phenomena that I have debunked, and so, or at least in my readings have come to a debunking conclusion. And I want to make sure it's not the case for these kinds of miracles. The one miracle I tend to rely on the most is one that I have studied intensively, and that's the resurrection of Jesus Christ. I also use that miracle because it's the only miracle that we are obliged to believe in with divine and Catholic faith. So as Christians, we have to believe that Jesus rose from the dead. The church teaches that many other miracles, such as Marian apparitions, things like Eucharistic miracles, you are permitted to believe them if they are helpful for your faith, but you're not obliged to believe them. And so that's why another reason I haven't made them a major cornerstone of my case, whereas I believe the resurrection, it's foundational to our faith, and it needs to be defended for our faith to have a fighting chance. As St. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15, if Christ has not been raised, your faith is in vain. So I've taken it upon myself to do extensive research on the resurrection, and I include a few chapters on it in my upcoming book, Counterfeit Christs, which will be out later this spring. So, yeah, thanks for bringing it up. But hopefully in the next year or two, miracles might be something I'll look at for my own arguments and research. If you want more information on miracles, I'd probably recommend a booklet written by my friend Carlo Broussard. He's done a lot more research on this than I have, and he has a 20 Answers booklet on miracles, 20 Answers Miracles by my friend and colleague, Mr. Carlo Broussard. So I hope that is helpful for you, James. Thank you for calling in.
We appreciate it, James. Thanks so much. Hey, I have a quick follow-up question on that, Trent, because the miracles thing is interesting to me, too. And when I converted to Catholicism, I noticed that Catholics talk about it in a little bit different way than a lot of evangelicals do. When evangelicals talk about a miracle, especially in their past, they'll talk about a healing that occurred, you know, in their family or something that they attribute to, where Catholics think of, you know, apparitions generally, which all well and good. But I also noticed that when it comes to a person's, like, personal faith, like what really anchors my relationship with Jesus and continuing to have faith in him, right, you know, through hard times. A lot of times, like most of the time I find, there is some sort of experience that people have in the past that they consider miraculous, that's what they lock onto, right? Like this, I saw him do this, you know, and this sort of, but it's very rarely shared in evangelism or apologetics. So on one hand, it's like the anchor of the faith, but they never want to share it. I know, like, J.P. Moreland, for instance, shares about the guy who was literally healed. Like, the facts are there. Like, he was crushed in an accident, have the x-rays. The next morning, the x-rays are fine, this sort of thing. The guy had never shared it with anybody because he didn't want it to seem like he was you know, crazy. And I just want to get your take on that. Like, personally, maybe not in a debate format. Like, I understand totally what you're saying. But maybe personally, should we bring up those stories a little bit more than we do?
I think it's perfectly valid to share with someone when we're sharing our testimony how God has impacted our life. It could be through a normal moving of the Holy Spirit, receiving God's grace to get through daily life. It could be through providence. Providence is essentially when something good or fortuitous happens because of perfect timing that God has arranged, or that God has blessed us with a natural blessing such as healing. Not all healing is necessarily miraculous. It could just be that God has ordered the world so that you would be healed of this ailment, but you really feel that God did this for you and blessed you with this. And finally, it could be something miraculous, something that the church, we have a strict definition of miracles, would involve the suspension of the laws of nature, something that cannot be explained even in principle by natural operations of the world around us. And I think it's perfectly licit that if that affected you, you may not be able to prove it to others, but there's a difference between knowing something that's true and showing that it's true. And so it's fine to share and let others think and reflect upon how God has worked in your life.
Yeah, fantastic answer, Trent. Thank you very much. Another good book on this, huge scholarly two-volume set by Professor Craig Keener.
It's a great book, yes.
That I call Miracles, that I would recommend. All right, the number is 888-31-TRUTH, 888-318-7884. My name is Don Johnson, sitting in for Cy Kellett. You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. We will be right back.
Bringing you the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
A generation ago, Christian parents didn't have to worry about how to explain transgenderism to their 9-year-old children or help their teenager deal with mockery at school for believing in traditional marriage. But today, as our culture decays, we have to know how to talk to our children about these issues. In Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, Layla Miller and Trent Horn give parents the crucial tools and techniques to form children with the understanding they need, appropriate to their age and maturity level, to meet the world's challenges. If we're not teaching our children how to understand tough moral issues, then the world will. Read Made This Way and learn how to give your kids a firm foundation on which to build a life of moral clarity and happiness. Order your copy of Made This Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or logging onto the shop at Catholic.com.
Is the church wrong on contraception? In a culture that worships the pursuit of sexual pleasure, the Catholic Church's teaching on contraception can seem archaic and unintelligible. Its critics say it's outdated, theologically unfounded, and even harmful. And even faithful Catholics can have difficulty explaining this moral teaching. Catholic Answers is out to change all of that. That's why we've just released Trent Horn's dynamic new DVD, The Case Against Contraception. Using scripture, papal and magisterial teachings, natural law, and new insights provided by social science and medicine, Trent puts forward a compelling case for Catholic teachings with his trademark charity and persuasive graciousness. Be prepared to give a defense. Order your copy of The Case Against Contraception today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders. There are a lot of misconceptions about the Catholic faith. We clear them up on Call to Communion, tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to the show. Don Johnson sitting in for Cy Kellett today. I am here with Trent Horn. Before we go back to the phones, let me put in a quick plug. My new movie, Unprotected, which I have talked about with Cy before on the show, is now, just recently, within the last couple of weeks, now available on Amazon Prime. So if you are an Amazon Prime subscriber, you can now watch it for free. Just Google Unprotected Movie in Amazon and check that out. And while you're there, it'd be great if you left a nice review. Trent, as you know, people who don't like your message, sometimes they leave one-star reviews, whether or not they have actually watched the film or read the book. So,
I have seen that with my own work. Certainly, the one star assassins out there ready to take down a book or movies. And regrettably, though, some Catholics and Christians do this as well. People on both sides, knock it off. Don't try to torpedo. Because I will leave. Actually, I don't leave reviews because I hardly have any time for myself. But if I did, I have no problem reading a book on atheism and leaving it a positive review and saying, this book set out to defend atheism and did a good job. I disagree with its conclusions, but it does a good job at that. It's not sinful to recognize the technical merits of something and be honest. And because you would want an atheist to do the same thing. He watched Don Johnson's film on Unprotected. I think this film is terrible, has a terrible message, but it was executed well. We should have honesty in our reviews of one another, so a better dialogue about where we agree and where we disagree.
Yeah, absolutely. And people, just a little online thing. It takes a lot of work to put something out there and create it, and it's ridiculous that we do the one-star thing. Hey, let's go back to the phones. Jim calling in from Rapid City, South Dakota, listening on Real Presence Radio. Jim, you're on with Trent Horn. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Thanks so much for taking my call. Appreciate it being on the line, first-time caller. So this weekend I was driving, and I was listening to the radio, and there was this guy on the radio that was talking about the book of Revelation. So it kind of caught my attention because I like listening to talk radio.
Sure.
And he started to compare and go through Revelation, and then he started comparing the beast in Revelation to the Catholic Church, citing words within the Bible about seated on the throne, and he was given the power. And then at that point, I had to turn it off. But it made me realize, I'd always heard that there are other denominations out there that really think the Catholic Church is bad. But this is my first experience where I actually was able to hear it coming out of somebody's mouth.
Yeah.
Let alone they were on the radio and having a broad audience. So this has got to be actually pretty mainstream. So my question was, have you ever heard this argument made towards how the Catholic Church is evil, or it's the anti-pope, and how do you counter that if you actually experience that with somebody who has an anti-Catholic Church view that it's evil?
Sure. Well, the idea that the Pope is the Antichrist, that the Catholic Church is evil, or is the whore of Babylon that we see in the Book of Revelation, well, the claim that the Catholic Church is Antichrist or the Antichrist can be traced all the way back to the Reformation, that the Protestant reformers had to do something with the Catholic Church that claims to be the church Jesus Christ established, and so they claim the Pope and the Church was really the Antichrist spoken of in Scripture. Later on, when you see, flash forward 400 years later in Christian history, especially in the United States, among Protestant fundamentalists, you see some of them, this stuff goes all the way back to, Lorraine Bettner. Jack Chick would be another example of this. Dave Hunt, A Woman Rides the Beast. This is old school stuff that really inspired Catholic Answers to be started in the first place. It was this kind of rhetoric that inspired Carl Keating to start Catholic Answers, inspired Pat Madrid, Tim Staples, and Jimmy Akin, the guys who were really doing this back in the 80s and 90s to get out there and counter these kind of lies. And so this has been around for a long, long time. We have a lot of replies to this, but you should ask them, how do you know your interpretation is correct and you're not just reading into this your own preconceptions about the Catholic faith? Because the Book of Revelation is notoriously difficult to interpret. It uses a lot of imagery, symbolism, allegory. And so people have read over the past even several decades, people have read all sorts of different things into the Book of Revelation instead of letting the text speak for itself. So I'd recommend going to our website at Catholic.com to get a full rundown on just search Beast Revelation. I think we've got several articles on that question. But if you go through the verses and talk with someone, ask them, where does this explicitly point to the Catholic Church and nothing else? All right, because they'll point to Revelation, I think it's Revelation 17, talking about how the beast has seven heads, it sits on seven hills, and it was given throne and power to persecute God's holy ones. And they'll say, oh, well, that's the Catholic Church, and it sits on the seven hills of Rome, and it persecuted Protestants. You could say, well, okay, how do you know that it's not talking about the Roman Empire that was killing Christians at the time the Book of Revelation was written? Also, what do you mean that the Catholic Church sits on the seven hills of Rome? The Catholic Church is found in Vatican City, which is on Vatican Hill, across the Tiber River from the seven hills of Rome. The Catholic Church, the Holy See, the Vatican, does not sit on the seven hills of Rome. It's on Vatican Hill across the river from those seven hills. It seems clear when you read in Revelation 17 and other parts of Revelation, this antagonist, this enemy of God's people, is the Roman Empire, because Revelation 17 or 17 or 20 talks about how the numbers of the name of the beast are 666. Well, in Latin, Latin letters also have numerical values, and the numerical value of Emperor Nero's name — Nero was the guy who was crucifying Christians because he wanted to blame them for the great fire of Rome — Nero's name adds up to 666. So when you look at all the textual evidence, it seems clear that there is a Rome being talked about here, but it's the ancient Roman Empire, not the Catholic Church, whose Bishop of Rome is the successor of St. Peter. So I'd recommend going to Catholic.com to get the full rundown to explain to someone, but make them point out, say, how do you know this only applies to the Catholic Church? And point out those factual errors when they talk about the Seven Hills of Rome versus Vatican Hill. You know, what time frame this is talking about. John, the author of Revelation, talks about this persecution from the beast happening soon. He's talking about it within a first century context, not later in Catholic Protestant history. So I'd recommend the website for more. But is that a helpful start?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're the right guy to answer that question and help me out and give me some resources to continue on with this pursuit. So I appreciate it, and thanks for all you guys do.
No problem. Happy to help.
Thanks for the call, Jim. Let's continue right on down the line. Let's go to Nono, calling from Illinois, watching on YouTube Live. Hope I got your name right there, Nono. Welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hi. Hi, friend.
Hello, Nono. Good to hear from you again.
You too. Before I ask my question, just so you know, I have three copies of What We Think Never Said, and it's one of my favorite books to give out, especially to Catholic speakers who say stuff like God helps those who help themselves, or preach the Bible when preach the gospel always.
No, so, yeah. I know that I can count on you to keep What the Saints Never Said above number 2 million on Amazon. So I am eternally grateful.
Thanks.
So how can I help?
So there is someone in my life who, kind of like on your podcast, Evangelizing Friends and Family.
Sure.
Who is, someone I really respect, but in a position of really high authority over me, and faithful Catholic, but I just found out she is using the IUD. Mm-hmm. And, even the way I found out about this was something that was kind of private and confidential, so not even something I can bring out. And it's been on my mind for a really long time, but I don't know whether or not to approach the topic or how to approach the topic and stuff like that, especially considering this. I mean, this person is my mom's age or older, and,
right.
Sure.
So this
is none of my business what's happening in her personal life. So, yeah.
Classic prophet not accepted in their own homeland. And second, you found this out, but this person doesn't know that you know, or you kind of found out in a way you weren't supposed to?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That makes it even more difficult. So if that's the situation, I don't recommend a blunt face confrontation about this, because then there's issues of privacy, and then it may not be a fruitful discussion. I think what you could do is have general conversations with your mother just about how you've been doing reading about what the church teaches about contraception, and you really love how beautiful it is, and you've been reading also about just how much you can't believe how contraception can hurt women. You can mention different ones and then kind of slide in there what the IUD does to women, how it causes perpetual infections and can be bad for their health. But more so, it goes against their dignity as women. So you could talk about, is it something joyful you've been studying and you're happy to share with her? And you might even sense a prickling of discomfort. You'd ask, is everything okay? Is something wrong? And then she might volunteer the information to chat with. But I would try to bring it up in kind of that indirect way. I don't know if you have any other thoughts, Don, but Don is the director of a wonderful documentary about contraception called Unprotected. And so I don't know if you have any other thoughts about this as well, because we're doing research on this subject for a while.
Yeah, I have. And I agree with you, Trent. The positive, I think just accentuating the positive, sit down with her and watch Amazon Prime tonight and show her Unprotected. Just the positive impact that the Catholic Church's teaching has on people and the negative impact that the world's teaching has. It's not just no, because we don't want you to have any fun, right? It's a very compelling message, I think, if presented in its, sort of entirety. So, just to add on to what Trent was saying there, Nona.
How does that sound?
Okay, thanks. That's because, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Because I was thinking I know all the arguments and all these things to say in a discussion, but like how to bring this up, especially, you know. So thank you. Yeah. I'll try that out.
Yeah, I think that would be good. Talk about the positive appeal to nobility and dignity that you love what the church teaches on contraception, because it talks about the dignity of women, that their bodies are healthy. It's not something that we should break. It's not something to be broken. And I know, no, you're calling on YouTube Live. Are you back in Nigeria now?
No, I'm still in school.
Oh, that's right. You're in Illinois, right? Yeah. Okay. Is your mom back over there, or is she in the States?
It's not my mom, but it's someone from Nigeria, someone I respect in
Nigeria.
Oh,
someone like that, someone who kind of has that older authority over you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, I see. So, yeah, I would definitely recommend through that, and then you could even pass the link on to Unprotected and just, you know, bring up these things you're studying. And, yeah, there's an idea here. When we try to get people to change their behavior, people are always hesitant to change. They resist when we talk about, hey, you shouldn't be doing this. Stop that. Don't do that. What are you doing? What's wrong with you? People get defensive. A friend of mine once talked about appealing to nobility. It's when we say things to someone like, when we say to someone who does something wrong, why are you doing this? You're better than this. I know you. You're better than this. Or I know that you have dignity as a woman and contraception takes away from that. You shouldn't have to suppress your fertility as if it's something that's bad. There are ways to lovingly share yourself, your body, your fertility, you know, with your spouse. And so I think appealing to people's nobility when we disagree on moral issues of how good they are, how great they can be, how much dignity they have, that is more effective in the long run to get people to change their hearts around than kind of a blunt hammer. So something else to consider. I'm grateful you called, and it was nice to see you at the SEEK conference. Hopefully we'll see you at a few other events. So thanks again for calling in.
We appreciate it, Nono. We're going to get right back to the calls momentarily, but first, let me ask you this. Are you wondering how to develop a deeper interior life? Well, as we move towards Lent, we've got a brand new free, yes, free ebook available. All you have to do is go to shop.catholic.com and download your free copy of Growing Closer to God, What is the Interior Life? It's called Growing Closer to God, What is the Interior Life? You can get it for free at shop.catholic.com. or the Catholic Answers Facebook page. We will be right back with more of your calls right after this. Stick around.
Hi, this is Trevor Williams from the Pittsburgh Pirates, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live is proudly supported by CatholicChemistry.com, a new dating site for Catholics who want to do dating right and believe relationships start with Catholic chemistry. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicChemistry.com for their generous support on the web at CatholicChemistry.com.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
Yeah, at first I love the show, but I just wanted to call to encourage that previous caller who had called about the Latin Mass and just encourage him to keep giving it a try and especially try to meet some folks outdoors and his wife meet some people, and that does make that experience so much better. And thank you for your historical background, and it was a good interpretation of the history.
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
Pope Francis reminds us that it does not take a specialized degree in theology to become a great evangelist. We're all called to evangelize. Think about the woman at the well. After she encountered Jesus, she immediately went into the city and invited others to meet him as she had. You and I can go out now and do the same. And St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. Get involved today by contacting us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
We're back. My name is Don Johnson, sitting in for Cy Kellett today. You can find out more about me at donjohnsonministries.org. We're here with Trent Horn talking about tips for defending the faith, and we're going to go directly back to the phones. Mary has called in from Silver Spring, Maryland, listening on Sirius XM 130. Mary, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. A statement first. I believe the Catholic Church teaches that through sanctifying grace, we're all predestined for heaven. And so, if so, how does this differ from some Protestant ideas of predestination? And I do have a follow-up question.
Sure. Well, the church doesn't, I'm not aware of any magisterial document that uses the phrase that you described, at least within that formulation of it. When we talk about predestination, a term which does appear in the Bible, I would recommend our listeners and yourself check out paragraph 600 of the Catechism, which simply says this: to God, all moments of time are present in their immediacy. When, therefore, he establishes his eternal plan of predestination, he includes in it each person's free response to his grace. And it goes on to talk about how both Herod and Pontius, quoting scripture, both Herod and Pontius Pilate, with the Gentiles and the people of Israel, gathered together against your holy servant Jesus, whom you anointed to do whatever your hand and your plan had predestined to take place. For the sake of accomplishing his plan of salvation, God permitted the acts that flowed from their blindness. So the idea here is that what happens in the world, God is not surprised by it. The church does not have a complete, whole theology of predestination where every single question is answered. Theologians differ about the finer points about the relationship between grace and free will and how God predestines us. But we do know two areas we can reject. First, God does know what's going to happen. When God creates the world, he knows who's going to go to heaven, who will accept his offer of grace, and who will reject it. God has predestined that. He knew us before, you know, we were even in our mother's wombs. He chose us. We did not choose him. And so God predestines. He's not ignorant of the future. He's actively involved in it. So the solution of open theism, that God just doesn't know the future, is off the table. But on the other hand, it's not that we don't lack freedom. God doesn't predestine in the sense that he arranges every single thing to happen in the universe, or he ordains actively who goes to heaven and who goes to hell, and we're all puppets on strings, essentially. That would be the Calvinist view of predestination. That would be the other extreme. So within those, the Catholic Church affirms that God predestines our salvation. He has chosen us. He knows the future. But part of that plan, that eternal plan of God, includes our free choices and free responses to him. And how God's knowledge and predestination and our free choices interact, that's where Catholic theologians have differed over the centuries. But essentially, that's what we have to affirm, is that God predestines, he plans our salvation, and we can freely respond to it. That those are just the core things we have to affirm as Catholics. So how is that as a start? What do you think of that?
No, that's really great. The bottom line, though, is my brother cannot, for some reason, grasp how he has free will then. If God is in the now, knows everything, knows our end, why doesn't he send us automatically, without asking, the grace to do the right thing, so that when he dies, you know, he can see, he's in the beatific vision. He doesn't understand that, and I don't know how to explain that.
Sure. Let me ask a follow-up question, Mary. So you said this is your brother?
Yeah.
Okay, so your brother doesn't know. It sounded like there were two issues he had. One, if God knows the future, how am I free? And two, why does God not just give us sufficient grace so that we automatically go to heaven? I want to make sure I understood you.
Yeah, and that's it in a nutshell.
Okay. Two points then. Number one, God's knowledge of the future does not determine the future. Just because God knows what will happen in the future, that doesn't mean his knowledge of it determines it. That if the future were different, if I made a different choice in the future, all that would mean is that God knew something different. God's knowledge of the future would be different. God's knowledge isn't what makes things happen, because God is outside of time. Remember paragraph 600 of the Catechism. It says that to God, all moments of time are present in their immediacy. So you could explain to your brother this way, that, you know, if I'm looking at you right now sitting in that chair, me watching you in the chair doesn't keep you from standing up or sitting down. Me watching you, that doesn't change anything. Well, to God, every moment of time is present to God. He's outside of time. He sees all of the moments in one eternal vision. So if God sees me in the present, God's watching me right now, doesn't stop me from getting up or sitting down. God is watching me in the future too, doesn't stop me from getting up and sitting down at that moment of time either. That we can still freely make our choices. And another analogy I've heard is that if I'm on, and this is a rough analogy, you know, don't take it literally, but if I'm on top of a building and I look down and I see two cars going really fast on the street and I know they're going to hit each other. The fact that I know the future because of my vantage point doesn't mean I caused those cars to hit. It just means I'm in a special position to know that is what they're going to do. Now, that's a limited analogy, but something best we can take from it. So that's part one. Part two, why doesn't God just give us this kind of irresistible grace? That's what Calvinists believe, that God's grace is irresistible, that God could, once he saves you, if God gives you his grace, you can't say no to it at the beginning and you won't say no to it later. And so you are destined to heaven once he's given you this irresistible grace. But that is not what Scripture teaches. Scripture teaches that even those who believe and receive the grace of God can fall away from the faith and resist God's grace and resist the Holy Spirit. In Acts chapter 7, Stephen, the church's first deacon, he told the Jewish leaders of his time, echoing the same words the prophets had denounced in the Old Testament, "You stiff-necked people, you always resist the Holy Spirit." Jesus said in, I think it's Matthew 23, how he, as God in the Old Testament, longed to gather together the people of Jerusalem like a hen gathers her chicks, and he said, "But you would not." So people can still resist the grace of God. God doesn't give us irresistible grace because he doesn't want to turn us into puppets. Love has to be free, and God allows us to either accept his love or to reject it, but gives us our freedom in that response. A good resource you might want to share with your brother on predestination, salvation, and the fact that we can reject God's grace might be my debate with James White on the question, can a Christian lose his salvation? You can just look that up. Trent Horn, James White debate might be a fun intro to him on the topic. So are those some helpful resources and explanations? Mary?
Oh, no, this is perfect.
Okay, good. I'm glad to be helpful.
Thanks for the call, Mary. We appreciate it. We're going to move right on down the line. Maggie calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Maggie, you're on with Trent Horn.
Hello. Thank you, gentlemen, for accepting my call. And Trent, let me start by saying I wish I could invite you to dinner because I need your wisdom. I am a third-order discalced Carmelite, mm-hmm. and my husband has become an atheist. And it's excruciating. He lost his faith for two reasons. One, the suffering his father went through as he died, and then the scandal with the church that kind of finished him off. And as a Carmelite, obviously, I am involved in a great deal of prayer, so I know that that is one angle covered. Do you have any recommendations or suggestions? He's a very logical man, and to give you an idea of how we balance one another, mm-hmm. When I describe our relationship, I say, imagine a ship out at sea with a leak. He would immediately go to fix the leak, and I would immediately gather up all the people. And so we're a wonderful balance because we each have our own different gifts, and together we're unstoppable. Because whatever problem needs to be overcome, we each bring our gifts. But he's got the logic thing, which I'm not very good at. And so do you have any recommendations or any suggestions?
Well, you know,
I could.
Sure. I think the problem he may be dealing with is not a logical problem. I think it's a heart problem. I think it's an emotional problem. And actually, I think if I were to come over and talk with him, I don't think I would make much headway. I think this is a heart problem, and this might be something, metaphorical heart problem, I would say, that you or someone like you may be helpful to reach out to him. That sounds like he's hurting. I mean, he's still processing the loss of his father, and to see someone go through suffering and pain, you say to yourself, this isn't right, it's not fair, you want to get mad at someone, you want to get angry, and he's absolutely right. That's not the way the world is supposed to be. When God created us, he gave us, Adam and Eve, preternatural gifts, and our first parents rejected God, and we lost those gifts that protected us from death and from suffering. When seeing the scandal in the church, he's absolutely right to be mad. He darn right should be mad. It's just a disgrace, and I've been pretty grumpy in my own podcasts about that. So I think you can acknowledge that and be honest with him, and he'll need time to sort through these questions. But even when I get angry about suffering, I get angry about scandal. But you can say to him, well, let's ask the question, where do we go with that anger? Is going to atheism kind of jumping off the cliff? Is that going too far? I think it is, because when you see this evil, it kind of points back to God. The scandal in the church points back to, hey, there's a moral law. There's a law that says these acts are intrinsically evil. They're just wrong no matter what anybody says. Where does that moral law come from? When our relatives die, our loved ones die, We know they're not just atoms in motion. They are people with dignity. Why would we give up the faith that has the greatest chance of reuniting us with these people? Maggie, I hope you'll stay on the line. I'd like to get your email address. I will send you some resources, including books like The Problem of Pain and A Grief Observed, along with others that may be helpful. But I think he needs you to just show him love and help him through the pain he's having, and it'll be a step-by-step process. So I'll send you those resources. Give us your email.
We appreciate it, Maggie. Thanks for the call. And Trent, it's been a fast hour already. Where should people go to find all of your work real quick?
They can visit at Catholic.com, search for Trent Horn, or I'd recommend my podcast, TrentHornPodcast.com.
Fantastic show. Check it out. We will be back for Hour 2, Roy Shoman on the Jewish roots of Catholicism. My name's Don Johnson. Stick around. We'll be right back.